Downtown Vancouver. I'm standing at a crossroads. Across from me, I see CBC News on Hamilton Street. I'm standing at 300 Georgia Street, right in front of one of Vancouver's most beloved landmarks, the six-story VPL Vancouver Public Library. You think that this library is a multicultural place? Is it accepting to people of all walks of life?
I don't know if it promotes it. It seems to be pretty open to all walks of life, yeah.
I would agree with that statement, yeah. If you look at the number of ESL students and other types of students from different parts of the world who are using the facilities in the library, I think it's obviously a very welcoming place to people of all backgrounds.
I think it's more multicultural than any library I've ever been to.
Oh, definitely. It's definitely multicultural. Yeah. Absolutely. I would say so. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Okay, so if you exit this library, entrance right there, and you turn right in the same library building. There's a glass door. It says Government of Canada, and it's the IRB, which is Immigration and Refugee Board. Were you aware that in that section of the building, there's a detainment facility? Were you aware of this facility?
No, I wasn't.
No.
I was not. No.
No, I wasn't aware of that.
But what's your reaction, knowing that something like that is under this library?
I'd probably wonder why that would be the scenario.
My reaction is I'm not sure it has any relevance to the library.
It's surprising to me. I knew that there was a government building like adjacent to it, and I see it when I walk by, but I didn't know that's what it was for at all. So I'm surprised. Yeah.
Held without trial, without charges, they're detained. Really? Well, I would be curious about why they are detained, and what's the reason for being detained, and well, if it's a prison, yeah, because. I wasn't aware of that, but, you got to know why they're being detained before you make assumptions. You got to know.
So as it turned out, not many people knew that in the same building complex of downtown Vancouver's VPL, there also exists a detention center where refugees and immigrants are held without trial, without charges. Canada is one of the few countries in the world without a limit on how long immigrants can be detained. Canada is also a country known for its multiculturalism, diversity, and inclusiveness. So with this newfound information, I am struck by the juxtaposition of Canada's supposed inclusiveness in the face of this harsh reality. A treatment of non-citizens which has led me to question what exactly being Canadian even means or implies. I decided I needed to dig deeper into the details of immigration detention. What are the facilities in Vancouver really like, and how do migrants in Canada even get themselves into positions where they are ultimately detained? In my research, I came into contact with a source who I will be keeping anonymous for safety reasons, and the source had a chilling story about a friend of hers who was in his early 20s. He was an international student with a study visa, and this was in 2017. He was taken from his home and imprisoned at the VPL facility. He was not given any trial nor any hearing with IRB. He had absolutely no criminal record whatsoever, and so he was basically detained for 3 days. We think it was one day at the VPL. He spent the remainder of the 2 days in detention at the Vancouver jail. In essence, and you're going to see when we talk to my source, the only real criminal charges this migrant was guilty of were his skin color, religion, and first and last names, one of which was Mohammed.
Him and I actually were dating, and then I found out after he'd kind of fallen off the grid, like he'd kind of fallen off the map, I didn't know where he was, and I contacted his best friend, and it was his best friend who ended up telling me what had happened to him. So two men knocked on his door, and he opened the door, and they said that they were from the Canadian government, and they asked him to come with them, and so he went, and they took him, and they kept him for what he claims was about 3 days, overnight, and he didn't have access to a lawyer, and they told him that the reason that he was there is because he has a very common name that also is, it's a very Muslim-sounding name, and so it can be kind of incriminating in a lot of spaces, and they told him that they were looking for someone on charges of homegrown terrorism on the West Coast, And so they were questioning him to see if he had any relationship to said person. Then denied, obviously, having any involvement in any kind of terrorist activity. And then was released. And after he had been released, went to his friends and kind of told them what had happened. He was obviously in a state of just, like, total disbelief, didn't really know what had happened to him. But they had kept his passport so that he wouldn't skip town. And he didn't have a Canadian passport because he was an international student. And then when he received his passport again, I think something like a week later, he skipped town and left and just has never returned, never has gotten in contact with anyone in Vancouver.
So they took his passport while he was detained, is that?
They took his passport when they released him, yeah. So they just said that they were keeping, they were holding on to the passport as, I forgot what the word is called, but essentially so he wouldn't take it.
Yeah,
it's
like
the next day.
Sort of security deposit. What was it like? Did he have access to internet or the phone or anything like that?
He didn't have access to the internet or the phone.
Okay, and then usually immigration detainees are not entitled to actual trials, but there's sort of in a formal hearing. He was not given one, was he?
No. The biggest thing about this incident that stuck out to me was not only the detention, obviously, but was the fact that it was definitely because of his name. That was, like, a big part of why he was taken, was his name.
And I just want to confirm, like, was he, like, a racialized person, or...?
Yeah, he was an international student from Africa, from Uganda.
So was he black,
basically? Yeah, he was black. He had very dark skin, and his name was Mohammed.
That alone is a sentence.
That'll do it.
In Vancouver, yeah.
I mean, it's, like, horrifying. When I found out in November, I was like, there's just no, it's actually surreal. And like, even when I tell the story, like every time, it's just, it's heartbreaking.
I decided I needed more information about Vancouver's immigration detention system. So I sat down with a local immigration and refugee lawyer, Peter Edelman of Edelman & Co. Law Offices. Peter is an active member of the immigration section of the Canadian Bar Association. He is an expert and a practitioner in immigration law. And so we sat down and he basically clarified a lot of questions that I had about the immigration detention system. My first question was, for people who do not have status, particularly those who are undocumented, how exactly do they come into contact and how do they get themselves into a situation where they are intercepted by anyone from the CBSA and then ultimately detained, particularly people who do not pose any national security or security threat at all?
The most common way for people to come into the custody of CBSA, if they're here without status or they're in the country and their status is expired or they never had status, is usually by coming into contact with the law enforcement in some way. So not having a SkyTrain ticket is a very common way for people to come into contact with law enforcement. When it comes to public accountability, CBSA is probably the largest law enforcement agency in Canada that has no civilian oversight. So there is no independent oversight of CBSA. And that's been a problem since its inception, right? So if you look at the RCMP, if you look at any police, like the VP, the Vancouver Police Department, they all have independent oversight. So you have commissioners, you have civilian complaints commissions, you have a number of different structures to give civilian oversight. CBSA has none. But in terms of the creation of CBSA, CBSA was created after 9/11.
So we've established that CBSA, being a post-9/11 creation, is an unchecked, rogue law enforcement agency. In the face of this, it's important to note that the majority of immigration detainees, not just in Vancouver but across Canada, are put into provincial jails where they are mixed with the general criminal population. The Library Square facility at 300 Georgia Street is merely a temporary holding center where individuals are held for under 24 hours before being moved to facilities like the Vancouver Jail Downtown or other regional correctional centers. In addition to the Library Square, Vancouver has a second temporary holding boarding center for immigrants. This one is in the underground of the YVR airport. The airport facility has a capacity of about 12 to 24 beds and is referred to as a Kafka-esque prison. It's underground, there's no daylight, and alongside the Library Square facility, both have small, cramped cells and absolutely no internet access and no allowed contact with the outside world. Immigrants are completely cut off. Even though, ostensibly, people being detained in such centers are not criminals and are supposedly not being punished, they are still held in facilities under conditions worse than in many prisons. The YVR Holding Center is also infamously known as the place of the death of Lucia Jimenez, an undocumented Mexican migrant who committed suicide in 2014 in the YVR Holding Center, and whose death CBSA attempted to hide from the public and the media.
Canada is an opening and welcoming society. These values have always defined who we are. But let me be clear. We are also a country of laws. There are rigorous immigration and customs rules that will be followed.
Now, the YVR Center, as well as a lot of immigration detention centers across Canada, are notorious for the fact that they do not have any oversight. And so lawyer Peter Edelman and I sat down and we talked a little bit about his experience working at immigration detention centers across Canada, particularly his experience at the detention center in Montreal, Quebec.
So I was, when I was in law school, I spent a lot of time working in the detention center in Laval, Quebec. And the default for immigration detainees was that they would go to the immigration detention center, but if they acted in a way that was not considered acceptable within that center, the implicit and sometimes quite explicit threat would be that they would be transferred to a provincial jail. It was a bit of a shock for me coming to British Columbia, where all immigration detainees get sent straight to jail. There is no immigration detention, and so the provincial jail is simply the default, and that's the norm for immigration detention.
Earlier this year, in January, a BC Supreme Court judge ruled that the practice of prolonged and indefinite solitary confinement in Canadian prisons was and is unconstitutional. Now, this statement has not entirely outlawed solitary confinement just yet, but it is in the process. Courts have deemed that it is unconstitutional, and Canada as a whole, they're trying to get rid of the usage of solitary confinement when used in administrative purposes. Now, this court ruling does not apply to immigration detainees, and while technically immigration detainees are not actually held in solitary confinement, they're alone for long, long periods of time, and I liken that to being in actual solitary confinement, even if it's not called that. So I decided to speak to another legal expert, the BCCLA, that's the BC Civil Liberties Association, the executive director, Josh Patterson, who has been active in the media as well in cases of immigration detention, as well as when the ruling for solitary confinement was announced earlier this year. So we talked about some of the problems with the reasons that Canada Border Services Agency arrests or detains people, as well as the problematic conditions and just culture surrounding immigration detention.
That oftentimes people are detained on flimsy pretenses. Don't settle for this kind of looseness with any other law enforcement agency in the country. I've never understood why we put up with it and why the government is satisfied with it when it comes to CBSA, who deal with a huge number of especially vulnerable people and have more powers than regular law enforcement do in a number of cases, particularly at the border. In my view, there's no reason why a court would find that it's unconstitutional to hold a convicted criminal prisoner in indefinite solitary confinement, but it's just fine to hold an immigration detainee indefinitely in similar conditions.
I kept going back to what Josh had said during our meeting, that our government in 2018 was willing to and was actively in the process of punishing and detaining migrants, people guilty of factors out of their control, of being born outside of our arbitrarily colonially built borders, oftentimes in skin color just a few shades too dark or conforming to non-European belief systems. Our government was treating these non-citizens in ways worse than convicted criminals. that despite the multifaceted rainbow of skin colors under the refugees' welcome mirage that our PR sectors regularly and expensively promote across the globe, Canada is more concerned with arbitrarily punishing colored peoples than criminals and real national security threats. If we as Canadians want to be seen as inclusive, anti-racist, polar opposites to right-wing Trump-esque policies, we need to re-evaluate the very policies that our nation was founded upon and start to ask ourselves, why and how is a system like this even in place? I want to say a huge, huge thank you to everyone who agreed to be interviewed for this documentary and everyone who helped out along the way. A special shout out to CITR Radio for the support, particularly our current affairs coordinator, Alex DeBoer, without whom this documentary could not have been produced. Thank you.